did you know that coral reefs are often described as the rainforests of the sea? They support around a third of all marine life visible to the naked eye, from jellyfish and fish to crabs, marine mammals and seaweeds. But reefs are also extraordinarily rich in life that we can't see. A new study recently published in the journal Nature shows that living reefs host previously unknown biomolecules with real potential for future medicine and biotechnology. The research involved scientists at the University of Galway, including Professor Olivier Thomas. We spoke with Olivier and we asked him why these reef communities are so important.
You have been doing work on coral reefs, and they in fact have often been called the rainforests of the sea. Now, mind you, I would have thought great bodies of kelp would look more like a rainforest, but they're called the rainforest because they support such a huge amount of marine life. Now, are these warm coral reefs you've been working on in Galway, or are cold coral reefs? Or can you tell me what sort of coral reefs have you been working on in the first place?
Yeah, so that's interesting. Mainly we're working on warm coral reefs in the Pacific Ocean, but also the Caribbean. But it's true that there's also cold coral reefs in the territory of Ireland, in the deep ocean. So we worked also on that, but mainly the activity is on the warm coral reefs indeed, yeah, in the Pacific especially.
So what you've been looking at are these reefs that are biodiversity hotspots. So what do you actually do? I mean, do you go there and take samples, or tell us how you have discovered their hotspots? And are they hotspots for genetic, or are they hotspots for species, or are they hotspots for communities? Can you tell us more about the biological hotspots that these warm coral reefs are?
Yeah, so indeed, they are hotspots of diversity, these warm coral reefs. So that's now 10 years. We've built a big consortium with people in France, with the Tara people in France, but not only, Switzerland, Germany, America and Australia, where we really use develop expeditions in the Pacific to really study the diversity actually present in the coral reefs in the Pacific. So you are right to mention these different types of diversity. So we mean genetic diversity indeed. That's what we studied in this particular article, but also biodiversity in terms of species, which is certainly very, very important. As you said, these coral reefs, they host a lot of marine life, all types of marine life, going from the fishes, of course, but not only. So this is all types of diversity, I would say, but involving, of course, the communities as well, because they live from these coral reefs and all the resources they provide. Yeah.
But the coral reefs themselves, the actual coral structures, are part of a living organism in the first place. And then the reefs then, constructed by these living organisms, are then habitat for all the different varieties of animals that you've been speaking of. So can you tell us more about how the actual coral reefs themselves are formed in the first instance?
Yeah, so that's very important to make a difference between the coral reef and the coral species indeed, okay? So the animal coral is indeed an animal, right? So the reef is all the resources, the marine life that inhabits these reefs, right? But they're building corals, so that means that they are building an entire ecosystem over kilometers of underwater life, I would say, and then this is an animal living in close relationship with the zooxanthellae, so that's already a close association, and this allows actually other animals to live and thrive in this actually quite poor in terms of nutrients ocean.
So these reefs then are in these warm oceans, and they're being greatly impinged now by climate change, by the change in the pH in the oceans. And if the corals themselves cannot survive, if they become bleached and the animals die that make them, the whole ecosystems are in trouble as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And that's certainly the main concern here. It's not only for the animal itself, the coral, but it's if the coral dies, so all the marine life associated with this coral and fishes and all the lobsters and etc. will be totally affected, and they won't be able to survive in this environment. So the impact of climate change is absolutely huge, not only for the coral itself that can bleach with an increase of temperature, as we know, but also for the other species that are present associated with these corals. Yeah,
Olivier, talking of other species present, I mean, people may be familiar with coral reefs, at least on television, seeing all of these different types of colourful fish and crustaceans and anemones and plants in amongst them. And that's biodiversity that's obvious to the naked eye. But your research has uncovered that perhaps even more importantly, it's the biodiversity that we can't see, the microbiome that these reefs are so crucial for. Can you tell us more about that, please?
Yeah, this is actually the main discovery of this paper, is that we know, of course, that the concept of holobiont, so that's a big word, but that's just saying that there's a host, the coral animal, that lives in close association with a huge number of microbes, bacteria and others, microalgae among others. And indeed, this is totally hidden from our naked eyes, right? So if we go diving and we take nice photos of underwater corals, we totally ignore and we don't see actually the population, the diversity of microbes that these corals are also hosting. And of course, having corals endangered will mean this microbiome totally endangered as well. So that's indeed the major message of this paper, that's not only the invertebrates that are in danger and the fishes, but that's also everything that is associated with it. That means also the microbiome, indeed, the bacteria associated with the corals. Yeah.
And what does this microbiome actually do for the reef and for the health of the ocean?
Yeah, so that's actually absolutely essential to understand that. And that's the concept that we are developing more and more. It's what we call the ocean health, right? So this is not only, again, what we see in front of our eyes that is clearly important. It's the same as a human being. If you want, you have a gut microbiome. And if this gut microbiome doesn't work, then you are sick, right? So that's exactly the same principle. If the microbiome of the coral is not actually well maintained and in a good balance, then the coral won't survive in this environment. So this is absolutely essential. This is totally understudied. And what we revealed here is that 90% of this microbiome has been actually not described yet, has been not understood yet. So I think that's the main message, certainly, of this article indeed.
Olivier, why should this rather arid environment, rather uniform environment, doesn't change much, a little rise in temperature now and again, little changes in pH. Now, when one thinks of biodiversity, one thinks of the Amazon rainforests and places like that. But why should this rather arid environment have such extraordinary diversity? I believe there are 80 species of parrotfish alone in this environment. How could that come about? How can there be that many niches for things in this rather uniform, unchanging, what seems to me outside it, environment?
That's a very good question. So, and this is actually a very beautiful aspect of nature in the ocean, is that in this extremely poor environment in terms of nutrients, you have these coral reefs that are actually able to host all this diversity of fishes. And this is actually incredible. And mainly it's related to the presence of these zooxanthellae inside the coral, right? Obviously, these zooxanthellae will transform actually the light into nutrients that are absent in the water. And that's what the coral needs to actually thrive. And once you have coral, you have a loop of nutrients and all these different types of chemicals that the other organism need to actually thrive and develop themselves. So indeed, this is happening mainly in the coral reefs, but we can't forget that this is also the case in the kelp forest that we have in front of our eyes here in Ireland. This allows all this diversity of species to thrive, the parrotfish, as you say, but all the type of fishes. And this is absolutely essential for the communities who live from these fishes, right? So if you remove the zooxanthellae, if you change the temperature and the pH, as you were mentioning, then these zooxanthellae won't be able to survive in these difficult changes. And then the coral will be affected, and that's the effect that we call the bleaching, right? And then if the coral can't work and provide actually the nutrients that are necessary for the other organisms to thrive, then of course, you will see a disappearance of these fishes around the coral reefs. And this will affect actually all the population as well.
But Olivier, this holobiont that you speak of on your coral reef ecosystem, does this not occur in every ecosystem? I mean, why is it just the coral reef that it has such importance? Presumably any other ecosystem will have a whole collection of bacteria and viruses and all of these things as part of its microbiome too, controlling soil, for example, on land or other areas like that. So, I mean, is the one in the coral reef different, better, more important than the microbiome that you get in any other ecosystem?
Absolutely not. No. It's exactly the same aspect, and you're totally right to mention that the holobiont concept is present everywhere, right? We're making indeed a huge focus on the corals because obviously of this of the beauty of the coral reefs in the ocean and how they actually allow all these fishes to survive, etc. So and this is underestimated and understudied, right? So but the coral reefs are so important for all these little islands in the Pacific or in the warm regions of the ocean, Indian Ocean and others, that actually indeed we focus mainly on that today. But very soon, we actually have programs already on kelps in Ireland where we are studying as well this close association between the host and the microbiome. And this is something ongoing. This is just because we need to start somewhere. I would say that we start with the most emblematic coral reefs, which is certainly the most important because they're suffering deeply from climate change, where the others certainly will come after. But this is just a question of time. Yeah. But this is present everywhere, absolutely. Yeah.
Why is such an environment so fragile that slight changes in temperature are enough to threaten it? It seems a bit of a contradiction. All the great reefs are in fairly warm water, except perhaps for the ones off Ireland, the cold corals. But a few degrees of temperature rise and the whole thing is in big trouble. Now, this is the very diverse environment which has all these strings to its bow. And yes, it is that fragile. Why is that? Why is it like that?
Yeah. Listen, that's millions of years of evolution where the host actually has developed a close association with this microbiota, including these zooxanthellae, that actually transform the light into nutrients, right? So after a million years of quite stable, let's say, pH and temperature of the ocean, we are now observing some changes of pH and temperature, which is not huge, and you are right. But if we look at the evolution, the million years, this is becoming really acute in terms of change, right? So the temperature has not evolved for the last thousands of years, and now we're going to see with the Industrial Revolution and everything we know about climate change, a clear increase, okay, of temperature that leads also to a decrease of pH in the ocean. So all of this put together, the scale of it is more than sufficient to actually disturb the balance that has been established over a million of years between the zooxanthellae and the coral. And this balance is very delicate. And if you change now with the amount of change that we have in terms of pH and temperature, it's more than sufficient to actually disturb this balance and make this association not functioning anymore. And that's why actually this is acute at the moment. And this is kind of unique in the human history, I would say.
I just wanted to ask you, you said there that they changed light into nutrients. Now, light is a wavelength, and nutrients are molecules of things. So how can a wavelength turn into nutrients? How can you do one with the other? I mean, in photosynthesis on land, the light is used as a source of energy to move molecules about. So changing light into micronutrients seems like a miracle. Is there a bit missing in your sentence?
It's a long chain. You're absolutely right. Okay, it's a long chain of events. And the key element of that is chlorophyll, right? We know that on land. Well, it's the same in the coral reef. And that's why this association with this zooxanthellae is absolutely essential. The zooxanthellae will transform the chlorophyll into energy, and the energy will be needed for the transformation of molecules into nutrients, indeed, in the organism. So that's a chain of events, if you want, leading to actually providing the nutrients to all the coral, but also the rest of the environment.
You mentioned there, Olivier, about the bleaching of the coral and the effect of climate change and how sensitive they can be to these rapid changes in evolutionary terms. But I'm curious as to how the different microbiomes can either help to make them more resilient or may indeed hinder them. Do you know, do the microbiomes vary greatly from location to location across different coral reefs? And are some more resilient to climate change than others as a result?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Naya. And that's exactly the purpose of our next trip to the Pacific in a couple of months, actually. We investigated, first with Tara Pacific, we investigated the whole diversity of three species of coral in the Pacific, right? And we observed, actually, the effect of climate change is much more acute, let's say, in the eastern side of the Pacific than the western side of the Pacific, what we call that the coral triangle. And if you go to the coral triangle, indeed, the species of coral there seem to be much more resilient, okay? So that means they recover much easier from an increase of temperature, what we call marine heat waves. So this is something we're going to investigate now. And what we believe, and that's certainly why this study is so relevant, is that actually the microbiota is definitely involved into this performance, I would say, of some coral species and areas to be more resilient than others. So yes, we have now described in this paper the genetic diversity of the microbiome of different species of corals. And now we're going to study what, there is a huge variation, Niall, about the diversity of microbiome indeed among the same species of coral, right? So you will have a core of microbiota that is more or less common across the Pacific, but then you will have maybe more than 50% of the microbiome that's totally dependent on the environment, right? So on the islands where you are, the temperature, the different composition of the water, etc. And in some particular places, this microbiota is certainly much more important to prepare the corals to be resilient to marine heat waves. And that's what we're going to study in the next couple of months, is why, what is this microbiota that makes these corals more resilient than others indeed? Yeah.
You certainly get around. So where, what part of the Pacific are you going to in a few months' time?
Yeah, so we are going to really to focus on the coral triangle in a couple of months. So we'll start with Papua New Guinea, and then we're going to Malaysia, the Philippines, and all these nice places. The reason for that is that we really observed clearly that the resilience of these corals, the same species of coral that you can find anywhere else, the resilience is much higher, but significantly higher. They recover much easier about a heat wave, and that's unique, let's say, in the whole coral reefs that we have visited. So we want to understand what makes this so unique in terms of resilience, and certainly we'll again study in depth the microbiome of these corals that are more resilient. So that's the region is called the coral triangle. This is really where you have the most diversity of coral and species in the planet underwater.
Yeah. You're just going to the warm waters. There's plenty of corals off the coast of Ireland and nice kelp beds in the cold Irish waters. Why wouldn't you be here? Anyway, I don't blame you. Nice work if you can get it.
That's just the start, actually. The idea is really to give some evidence, obviously, that there are some parts of the planet where there is more resilience in terms in front of climate change. We're facing already climate change in Ireland, and we will exactly carry the same studies in Ireland and over the northeastern Atlantic to identify actually those kelps or those environments that make them more resilient than others. But it's just a question of time, but that's exactly the same principle that we were going to apply here. Yeah.
Well, good trip, and I hope you find out lots more interesting things. Good to talk to you. Thank you very much, Olivier Thomas.
Thank you very much.